Hacking, data, and identity theft are causing devastating problems. Globex Data is the solution for privacy and security in the digital world. Switzerland has the world's strictest privacy laws, and Globex Data's Swiss-hosted platform is outside of big tech with no data mining. Globex Data is now launching in the USA, offering email and messaging privacy and security to all Americans. Globex Data Limited, stock trading symbol SWISF. Web address, globexdatagroup.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Bill Raggio and Tom Jostlin of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. We're discussing the exit of the U.S. and NATO forces from Afghanistan and the advance, the very rapid advance of Taliban forces, even so that it has not been able to keep up with the withdrawal or consolidation, more politely, of the Afghan National Army. Al-Qaeda, however, you will recall 20 years ago that the reason the U.S. is involved in Afghanistan is because Al-Qaeda was using it as a base for transnational attacks. Tom, I come to you because, again, here at this moment, it is necessary to restate what we know about Al-Qaeda's representation in Afghanistan. Right now, what is your understanding of who or what is in charge of Al-Qaeda's representation to the Taliban? Is the Taliban comfortable with that? There have been contradictory remarks over the years that some members of the Taliban have said what a mistake it was to host Al-Qaeda because it permitted the U.S. and other forces to enter in and clean us out as if they were cleaning Al-Qaeda out. What is Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan now, and especially in the border region with Pakistan?
Well, John, you know, let's take the last part first when it comes to the Al-Qaeda relationship with the Taliban and whether or not the Taliban is actually remorseful for its longtime sponsorship and safe haven for Al-Qaeda. The answer is that officially, no, the Taliban is not. While some Taliban officials are willing to chat it up with journalists and make unofficial comments, the Taliban has never accepted any responsibility for actually harboring and aligning itself closely with Al-Qaeda prior to 9/11. And the reason for that is that they remain deeply and closely allied to this day. You know, one of the fundamental contradictions in this war over the past 20 years has been that the U.S. government has been ambivalent about whether or not the Taliban is actually in bed with Al-Qaeda. There is, to our minds, there is absolutely zero evidence that the Taliban has broken with Al-Qaeda at this point. There is a mountain of evidence showing that the two fight side by side this day because they are blood brothers. In some cases, the linkages are not just ideological. They're not just of kinship on the battlefield, but are actually genetic because they are so intertwined through marriage and other close familial relations that they are one and the same. And, you know, what's interesting is that Bill rightfully highlighted the fact that this offensive by the Taliban really kicked off around May 1st of this year. That's significant because that was the withdrawal date that was enshrined in the State Department's agreement with the Taliban. And so they had basically decided, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, that the offensive would start on May 1st because the U.S. hands would be tied at that point. The U.S. would be leaving the country under the agreement and would be bound to not respond and defend the Afghan government or do anything to stop this massive offensive. So it's no mistake that they chose May 1st for the start of this. But it wasn't just the Taliban that chose May 1st. It was also Al-Qaeda. We have significant evidence from the United Nations reporting, U.S. Treasury Department, and other sources showing that Al-Qaeda has been consulting the Taliban throughout this entire process, has been guiding them in their political negotiations, and has been guiding and helping to formulate military strategy as well. This is the fundamental flaw in this war, was that the U.S. government went into Afghanistan, as you said, John, to disentangle Al-Qaeda from the Taliban, and 20 years later, the U.S. decided to pretend that that mission had been accomplished when it never was.
Al-Qaeda is an umbrella organization, the base. However, in your reporting, you've pointed to other organizations, organizations is too strong a word, entities making claims that are loosely connected to the Taliban. The list is partial. Movement of the Taliban in Pakistan, Lashkar-e-Taiba, Jaish-e-Mohammed, Harakat al-Mujahideen. Your report that they have been in dialogue with the Taliban. Does that tell us anything about the strength of the Taliban, that it makes common cause with all the bad actors in the area? And is Al-Qaeda involved in these conversations? I'm trying to imagine what the relationship is here when two or more of these significant warlords meet together.
Well, again, some of these personalities are dual-hatted. They're both Taliban and Al-Qaeda, or they belong to a Pakistani jihadist group and Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is deeply embedded within this milieu, so that makes it very difficult for people who, study this to get an accurate organizational definition of Al-Qaeda. And unfortunately, the American authorities have spent much of this time trying to play disconnect the dots and not come up with an accurate assessment of what Al-Qaeda looks like in the region. But I want to take this back to the religious terms here, John, because you have to understand from Al-Qaeda's perspective and the Taliban's perspective, the Islamic Emirate as it existed prior to 9/11 was the only religiously legitimate authority on the planet. And Al-Qaeda, the loss of that Islamic Emirate was a liability for Al-Qaeda. So it's no coincidence that they have spent the last 20 years helping to resurrect it, because from a religious perspective, it is imperative for them to actually bring back this and restore this Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. Again, one of the many problems with American policy, especially in recent years, but throughout, has been this ambivalence about the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan and whether or not the Taliban really wants to resurrect that and whether or not Al-Qaeda is really invested in it. And here at this final hour of the story, we think it's the final hour, you can see that ambivalence was misguided all along. That, of course, as we've said all along, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are fighting and waging jihad to restore the Islamic of Afghanistan. And now we're seeing areas of Afghanistan go dark in 2021.
Bill, what is the Haqqani network and what relationship does it have to the Taliban, to Pakistan, and to Al-Qaeda?
Yeah, John, and the Haqqani network is really, it embodies this milieu, as Tom expertly notes. It has its feet in all of the pools. The Haqqani network is a integral part of the Taliban. It's a branch of the Taliban that operates in eastern, and now it's expanded its tendrils into northern and southern Afghanistan. Its founder, Jalaluddin Haqqani, helped Osama bin Laden come back to Afghanistan from the Sudan in the 1990s. The network itself, it's supported by the Pakistani military and intelligence establishment. It's also based in North Waziristan and Kurram districts or tribal agencies in northwestern Pakistan. So it receives direct support from the Pakistani military. Sirajuddin Haqqani, Jalaluddin's son, Jalaluddin passed away a couple of years ago. He is one of two deputy emirs of the Afghan Taliban. He also has been identified by the UN, by the United Nations. One member state said that he's a leader within Al-Qaeda. Sirajuddin Haqqani is directly responsible for the Taliban's military operations, its strategy, and implementing its strategy in Afghanistan. The Haqqanis are embodiment of this network or this syndicate, however you want to put it. Its commanders have been identified as leaders of the Taliban, as well as members of Al-Qaeda, dual-hatted, as Tom had noted. This has been going on for well over a decade. If you want to look at what this network is, look no further than Sirajuddin Haqqani and his followers.
Tom, Sirajuddin Haqqani, what does it look like when he has a dialogue with Al-Qaeda? And does that mean that he's getting information from Zawahiri? One of the revelations you and Bill made years ago following the strike on Osama bin Laden's compound in Pakistan was that bin Laden was a micromanager. Does that continue with the doctor from Egypt? And does Siraj Haqqani need orders from Al-Qaeda? How do they exchange information? And then how does Siraj Haqqani influence the Taliban? Do we know all of that command structure?
We don't know all the command structure, John, but I would say this from researching this for so many years now. When Sirajuddin Haqqani discusses matters with Al-Qaeda, it's like he's talking to his brothers. It's not something where it's one organization talking to another. It's a conversation within the family. And that's why this has all been such a big lie that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are easily separable, because it's like saying to, a group of brothers that you're going to separate with one another. In some cases, we know that the new generation of jihadis that have been grown up in Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan are literally the sons and daughters of the nexus between the Haqqanis and Al-Qaeda. They're literally born to parents that are on the one hand Afghan and on the other hand Arab, for example, that have been raised in this milieu. So it's not something where it's like, you know, it's not like it's a foreign entity talking to Sirajuddin Haqqani when he sits down with Al-Qaeda. It's just a conversation amongst jihadi brethren. But, you know, you raise an interesting question here about what Ayman al-Zawahiri's command structure looks like. The big assumption prior to the bin Laden raid in May 2011 was that Osama bin Laden did not, in fact, run an international network and that he was just a spiritual figurehead and that Zawahiri was running the network. Well, it turned out that Zawahiri was intimately involved when we examined the files that were captured in Osama bin Laden's compound. Zawahiri, of course, was intimately involved in managing this network, but bin Laden still retained the ultimate authority and was still ultimately in control of it and was answering questions and inquiries and giving orders around the globe at the time of his death. But this cache that was recovered in Abbottabad actually disproved the paradigm that bin Laden was a spiritual figurehead. This is something that the U.S. intelligence community had to revise their assessments for. But very interestingly, they then over time returned to the assessment or the view that Zawahiri now was not really in control of this international network, but instead was just a figurehead and was basically sort of hiding somewhere and not doing anything. I would say this is failing to learn the lessons of the past. We have multiple indications of that Zawahiri has remained in contact with subordinates, that he's still giving orders. We don't know the full extent of that, of course. We can't. They're a clandestine organization. But it would be a mistake for many people to assume that Zawahiri is not issuing orders around the globe.
Bill, some days ago, there was a report that more than 1,000 Afghan National Army soldiers in combat with Taliban fled the battlefield and fled in Tajikistan. We had a note from the Moscow reporting that the Russian Federation was basing 6,000 service personnel in Tajikistan to guard against the Taliban or the disorder from Afghanistan. What do we know about the Central Asian states and the Taliban? I note this because in your reporting, you remind me about the good old days when we reported on the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan, or Jamaat Ansarullah, or Khatab Imam Bukhari, or the Turkestan Islamic Party. Are those all sentimental organizations, or are there still links to the Taliban in all those Central Asian states? Do we know, Bill?
Yeah, so these groups are currently fight under the Taliban's banner. What Al-Qaeda has done is expertly is organize these groups and got them to get on board with the Taliban project. So they're directly tied. These groups have aspirations to fight inside of their home countries in Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan. But right now their focus is on helping the Taliban restore their Islamic emirate. The Taliban is talking a good game with these other countries and saying, no, these groups won't be a threat to you. You don't have anything to worry about. But remember, they said the same thing prior to 9/11 to the United States. You don't have to worry about Osama bin Laden. We have him under control. And then we got 9/11. This is something the Taliban lie about routinely. And by the way, those 1,000 Afghan security forces that fled to Tajikistan, they didn't flee while in the middle of a fight. They left before the Taliban even rolled up. That's how you know that the Afghan security forces, by and large, have been demoralized. There are elements that are fighting, and this is typically around the cities. But yeah, in the hinterlands, they're fearful of the Taliban. But so back to the stands. These countries are very concerned. They don't want to deal with the refugee flow, for one thing. And then they're concerned that these jihadist groups are going to migrate back into their countries. And because many of these countries had problems, particularly Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, had problems with terror attacks in the 2000s and early 2010s that emanated from these terror groups, from the organization of these terror groups, which were using Afghanistan as a base of operation while they were working with the Taliban. So the Taliban, look, they lie about this all of the time. And unfortunately, Western reporters and government officials, they eat it up because the Taliban are telling them exactly what they want to hear.
Bill Raggio, Tom Johnson, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy's Long War Journal. When we come back, how do we understand the war now that the U.S. has pulled out? Who to listen to? What organizations are candid about the disorder? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Data privacy, hacking, ransomware, and data theft have become devastating problems for businesses and individuals. Globex Data has the solution. Switzerland has the world's strictest data privacy laws, and Globex Data's Swiss-hosted secure application, spelled S-E-K-U-R, uses a proprietary technology outside of big tech, which means your data remains private and secure. Globex Data just signed two telecom giants to distribute its secure communication solution to over 400 million people in 30 Latin American and Asian countries. Secure is the solution for messaging and email privacy with no data or phone number mining. Secure users can message non-secure users in full privacy and security using chat by invites. Globex Data is now available in the U.S., bringing messaging and email privacy and security to all Americans. This Data Privacy Minute has been brought to you by Globex Data Limited. Stock trading symbol SWISF. Web address globexdata.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.